up, hockey fans? This is episode 79 of the Clappercast, in the last week of February here. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, we've got a lot to cover today. How's it going today, man?
You know, not too bad. I think the real question is, how are you doing? I see you were a bit confused when you saw the Caps had Lars Eller on the top line today.
Yeah, they're going for the big rig line, I guess, with Ovi, Wilson, and Eller, and I think it's about like 660 pounds altogether, so going for that long pants hockey, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Brian Burke is on his way in right away.
Yeah, kind of confusing, but Eller has been playing up and down the lineup a little bit because of injuries and COVID and stuff, and he's been hurt himself, and so the Caps have been kind of playing with a bunch of different line combinations, so it's kind of weird to see him on the top line, but it's not exactly unprecedented with how they're going so far. So we'll see how that turns out. The Caps are wearing their reverse retros that are looking really sharp. So hopefully they can get a win in those. But we've had a bit of some weird news coming out of the New York Rangers this week. And it's kind of centers on their star forward, Artemi Panarin. Why don't you fill us in on what's gone on there, Sean?
So, yesterday morning, it broke quite abruptly that Artemi Panarin was granted a leave of absence from the New York Rangers. This leave of absence came in the wake of the release of allegations that back in 2011, he beat up an 18-year-old woman in Latvia when he was playing with Russian team. Can't remember which one. And, you know, this came out of nowhere, and then it also was released or, you know, put out with a statement from an old coach that had something along the lines of, it's a pattern of behavior, a pattern of evil behavior with his anti-Putin statements. And, you know, immediately, without commenting on the allegations themselves, because like there is very little information and the source is incredibly unreliable and not trustworthy at all where the allegations came from. But it just seems highly suspect that, you know, a month or so after Panarin goes on social media and criticizes the Russian government and supports Navalny, the opposition leader, all of a sudden this story breaks out of Russia, and you know, you kind of wonder what the intentions, what the motives are, and whether or not it's even true. It's not the type of thing that you you don't want to pick sides immediately because you don't actually know what happened, but it's like the source is very questionable at best. It's sketchy.
yeah, that's a good way to say it. I think that I don't think this was from like the Ministry of Sport or anything out of Russia. It was just kind of coming out of that one coach, right? Or was there any sort of,
I know the coach commented on it, but I don't know if he was the
government
source.
Russian sports, is their truthfulness leaves a lot to be desired. You know, them being banned from Olympics, them being involved in giant doping scandals, state sponsored doping scandals. And they've always been really linked in the last few years to Putin, where they've, you know, they're basically just stooges of Putin. And like you said, Panarin has been, he's criticized Putin. He's been an advocate for Navalny by liking posts and stuff. And so has Alexander Radulov and a few other Russians. And Nikita Zadorov is also a known, I'll say, not Putin supporter, and is critical of the Russian government. And it just seems like a classic smear campaign for Panarin. You know, he's the most high profile Russian hockey player that is anti-Putin, and you look at guys like Malkin and Ovechkin that are huge superstars in the NHL and in Russia. You know, they've got like fashion lines and stuff, and they're just huge, you know, they've almost got like that cult of personality where they're just huge icons. They're very pro Putin. They've got like things that they do with Putin. They're friendly with him, at least in the public eye. and Panarin's probably the most high-profile one that isn't.
Yeah, to me, it really seems like just a deliberate attempt by, you know, the Russian government or somebody in the Russian state that's trying to just threaten and ruin Panarin's North American reputation. I mean, they know that an allegation like that is going to cause a stir in his public perception in North America. But comparing how this was released and the talk about it, comparing it back to like Slava Voynov, where it's like they didn't seem to care. It's a stark contrast between what the story that came out there and what they're caring about now. Now, you know, one thing that really stood out to me in terms of, you know, the truthfulness or like who or the truthfulness of the allegations is the statement that the Rangers put out. Did you read that?
Yeah.
You know, normally the teams are kind of like very beating around the bush with these statements. They're like, you know, we won't comment on the matter. We support the investigation of whoever. Like, they're really, you know, distancing from themselves, from, you know, what's actually happening. But the Rangers put out a statement that reads, Artemi vehemently and unequivocally denies any and all allegations in this fabricated story. This is clearly an intimidation tactic being used against him for being outspoken on recent political events. Artemi is obviously shaken and concerned and will take some time away from the team. The Rangers fully support Artemi and will work with him to identify the source of these unfounded allegations. Like, that is quite strong by the Rangers to take a side that quickly, that strongly. So, you know, they obviously know more information and have a better sense of what's going on behind the scenes, but you have to put some weight behind what they're saying to determine, you know, where the story came from, what's happening here.
Yeah, it is a very strong statement from them, and it's good to see that they have his back, and you know, they're potentially up against a Russian-sponsored smear campaign. And not to get too like tinfoil hat or anything, but we've seen, you know, I'm super into military history and world affairs, and we've seen Russia get involved in like the polonium poisoning of people who have defected out of Russia who were in like you know, intelligence agencies. They've had people poisoned with polonium. So it's they've done a lot of crazy stuff, and you know, that's all state sponsored. And
yeah, this and that's
kind of run of the mill for them to go after the character of someone and to just make up, you know, a phony paper trail that this person is
discrediting
someone who's not to be. Yeah, they're discrediting him. They're not someone to be looked up to. They're, you know, they don't toe the line, right?
So, yeah, yeah, and that goes back to like this, the style or the topic of choice by these allegations is like, you know, someone who is seen as like committing assault and battery on other people isn't going to be looked at very strongly by like the wider North American culture. They can get kind of dragged through the coals there with that. So it's kind of like a very selective allegation. And I mean, even further, like, to talk about like the phony paper trail and, you know, making it up and everything. The hotel that this allegedly happened at, that owns the bar that this supposedly happened at, said this never happened. Artemi's teammates at the time, like none of them that were there, said this happened. So he's kind of got support from a lot of people. And my main concern is that him and his family are safe, because you don't know what's going to happen like behind the scenes. And you just really hope that he's able to get them to a safe location. He's able to get himself to a safe location and kind of take care of business as, you know, as well as they can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's honestly probably going to get to the point where he has to live in the U.S. full time, because it's not safe for him to go back to Russia. He has gone back to Russia in the off seasons while he's been a critic of Putin. But honestly, I don't know how long that's going to last, because it's getting to be probably pretty dangerous for him to do that, which is sad because, you know, that's his home country and everything. But, you know, he probably has to get all of his family out of there and to North America and to New York, because of his political views, which is just absurd. But, you know, that's modern Russia. So, you know, hopefully everyone's safe and that they, he gets to be back in the lineup sometime soon, but he's taking some time off to figure it out, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like. How do you prove that you're not guilty of something that happened in 2011, 10 years ago, and you've got the government basically against you? Who knows what's going to happen with that? So a bit of a weird one, very, very strange, but it's really good to see that the Rangers are backing him up on that. And I'm definitely leaning to it's a bullshit smear, but I mean, it's always a possibility that it's true.
Yeah, and it's hard to balance believing the source or believing the victims versus the source and the credibility of the source, and trying to like balance all of that. So it's mostly just putting the little bits and pieces of info we have together to kind of figure out where we stand a little bit now, and then wait for more information to come out or wait for the story to develop a bit further.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that it did happen, because there's all sorts of stories out of, you know, pro sports or specifically Russian sports where you've got like Malkin and Ovechkin got in a fight in a nightclub in Moscow. And it was like kind of swept under the rug, and then someone asked about it later, and he was like, "Yeah, that happened." So, you know, and then you know, Slava Voynov, that sort of stuff. So, it's entirely possible that it did happen, which is probably why it made such a headline, is because it's the perfect thing to target someone about, and make a big splash about. So, because it is hard to prove that you didn't do it. So hopefully we figure out what happens, and Panarin can get back to the ice, because the Rangers need him desperately because they suck at scoring.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, hopefully, you know, him and his family are safe first and foremost, because like you were talking about the history of what's gone on in with the Russian government, like, you never know what could happen, and you just hope that everybody on his end is safe and taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how about we switch gears here to something new and unique the NHL tried over the last weekend, where they had outdoor games that were outside of a stadium. They were just out along a lake. They had a couple of games over at Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, kind of nice. You know, the requirement to not have fans there kind of opened up the possibilities, and they had it at a really cool location in Lake Tahoe, which is just an unreal setting, you know, up in the mountains in between California and Nevada. And it's really, really beautiful. It was perhaps a little too nice on the first game when the sun was shining and beating down on the ice and causing some problems, where people were toe-picking and falling over during the first period, and
oh, yeah,
so they delayed the game.
That ice was brutal. It was like a slushy, basically.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Also, shout-out to firefighter Dusty Gooch, who was one of the first responders that was honored before the game. That was just an absolute all-name team name. Dusty Gooch. So that lit up social media.
Yeah, that was trending on Twitter. Dusty was trending on Twitter for the rest of that day, which is great. Yeah. It's great. It's great exposure for him. Great exposure for the cause. Great exposure for the game and the league. So
yeah, it was awesome game. They both wore in that Vegas Colorado game. They both wore their reverse retros with those absolutely dynamite Colorado Avalanche Nordique throwbacks.
Yeah, those are really nice.
Really cool. And still salty that Vegas gets a retro jersey, because they've been around for like 3 years.
It's such a historic franchise. Come on, let them have their moment.
Yeah. Historic. Yeah. They should have just put like a Stanley Cup final loser patch on there. That would have been a retro throwback for them.
Savage.
But yeah, it was awesome once they played the full game. It was pretty cool. Under the Lights, they played at 9 p.m. local time. And it was made a big deal that it was like midnight Eastern time, but it was like it wasn't really that far off from like a normal California like West Coast time. No. Game, second period, third period. So I don't know why it
Vegas,
was like
Colorado, so it's like 9-10 o'clock to play two more periods. It takes you to like 11:30.
Yeah, it was just like people were making such a big deal that it was like rescheduled for midnight. And it was like, yeah, but it's not in that time zone, so like,
yeah,
tone it down a bit here, guys. It's just kind of funny how, you know, the bias for the East Coast is so real because that's where
that's the only time zone that matters. It's like when Edmonton has a home game against like Toronto that starts at 4 p.m.
Yeah, during the week.
Yeah,
so it's like everyone who's at work in Alberta doesn't get to watch like the first two periods. So dumb. Yeah. And then the second game was the Flyers in those weird looking jerseys against Boston, against the Meth Bear. And the Bruins came just absolutely dripped out in those 90s like ski outfits.
Yeah, they embraced the reverse retro.
They really did. It was like 90s day, and Pasternak wore those sweet like Macho Man Randy Savage sunglasses, and Yaro Halak had like a fake mullet clipped into his hair that he wore like onto the ice and on the bench, and that was pretty legit. Yeah, it was a great weekend for memes, really, because you had Grubauer wearing sunglasses, you had Pasternak with his sunglasses, and an absolutely iconic interview where he was mad at the people interviewing him because they made him miss Barbie Girl, the song playing in the dressing room. So he was like upset by that he's like, oh, you guys made me come out here and now I miss Barbie Girl, and who knows what will be on when I get back in there.
Amazing picture with the quote below it, and he's just got this like oversized toque, the pink sunglasses, like a giant hoodie, and like the whatever hairstyle he's got going on, he looks like he like took a wrong turn on the way to the snow to the ski hill.
Yeah, in the like 1980s and 90s. Yeah.
it's just iconic. It's just going to be a picture that lives on for years.
Yeah, it was a success. You had you know, all the guys in the water next to the game, because it was right beside the lake. You had all these people on kayaks, sort of like people do in San Francisco during Giants games in the MLB. And so they had like all sorts of signs, and like there was a guy in a Sharks jersey that said like anybody but Vegas, and then Dusty Gooch. So it was just like a classic. It was really good. Like, yeah, it was just really great. So who needs fans,
right? For the league, like, that was just an amazing play to take the opportunity to capitalize on like the rise of popularity of outdoor rinks. Because, I mean, that's kind of rising in social media, is like all the glamorization of ODRs and, you know, people's backyard rinks, and, you know, all the rinks on the lakes and by the mountains and stuff. So it was just like a huge play by the league to capitalize on that and, you know, put that on the biggest stage. You know, and they did quite well. I mean, despite the issues with the Sun, you know, Gary Bettman announced that we've always been enemies with the Sun or something like that. So... You know, we kind of see
confirmed.
The NHL has it out for the Sun, which is very obvious. But I mean, they have to try and play during the day, because they're going to go and set all this stuff up by the water, by the mountains. They need to at least have some of it with the view in the background. So they're going to try and force at least one period so they get some imagery out of it. But I'm kind of interested to see, because the league has shown or has said now that they are interested in doing this again, but. And I would be fully for that. I think this is really cool in a way to like bring hockey to different areas of the country, area and different communities that wouldn't otherwise get a chance. But in seasons that they have fans, you know, how many spectators are they really going to be able to get at these outdoor games? Like, how much can they get in temporary seating and bleachers compared to when they have outdoor games at like football stadiums that get 30,000, 40,000 people? you know, that's just a huge loss in ticket revenue. So I don't know if they're going to be too keen on doing very many of these games, or how they're going to make up the difference.
Yeah, and plus, like, the ice shouldn't have that many people on it, right? So
I think
they were talking about
they'd always try and find a way to build a rink beside it, because I don't think they're going to be able to take that risk by putting all of their equipment on an actual lake.
Yeah, unless it was like Lake Louise, because I think they were looking into that, but the issue they had was that the Alberta government didn't want them to do like logos and stuff on the ice. They just wanted it to be like the natural ice.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't like screw with it aside from like, you know, cleaning it and like making it super smooth and everything, like game ready.
Right.
But they didn't want like, you know, screen printed like advertising and all that sort of stuff on it. And that was the hold up for Lake Louise, but that would be a lot colder and, you know, the ice would be super thick, like the natural ice. So I think that would be the coolest place to do it would be Lake Louise.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I, if there's no fans or limited fans in attendance, how does that work? And how do those teams make up for the loss of ticket sales that they would normally have, you know, based in like their home arena? But I think that probably gets made up with like TV somehow or advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. Or there'd be some
sales or something,
some
like that.
Way behind the scenes, or like some way to have like a whole weekend event or something that brings tourism to the region they're in. And then, you know, they get a cut of that or something, but it'd be a different one, but I genuinely hope that they find more venues for this. Because I think it's just a really, really cool opportunity to showcase different, you know, showcase like hockey in a natural state. It's just really cool.
Yeah, yeah, no, I definitely liked it. It was really cool. Definitely, I thought it was a lot cooler than the football stadium style outdoor classics, because it just felt more personal and less corporate, like somehow. And then even in the football stadiums, like, the fans are so far away from the game, because it's like this little, it makes the rink look so tiny. And there's like so much space in between where the boards end and where the fans, like where the seating begins. And so it just didn't get that vibe. It just looked like a game was happening and it was televised. Like, it was like, it wasn't like you had to be there. You know, it was like, no, nobody's there. It's just a game that's happening in a really cool place. It's not about, like, being there. It's just about the game and, like, how it's outdoors and it's special.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool, and I hope that they do more like that, but it probably... I'm afraid it's, like, a one-and-done, like, that sort of style, which would be shitty.
It would.
But at least we found out that Batman is a vampire. I mean, we are always had our suspicions, so...
I think yeah, that's a reasonable conclusion after the weekend there.
Yeah. Our enemy is the sun. Classic Gary. Well, I guess speaking of Lake Louise is a good transition to Alberta, because I think you wanted to go over one, possibly two Alberta teams. Who could they be? So
Vancouver,
I think let's start with the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah.
I definitely passed geography in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Home province.
So, one particular Oilers player that I have traditionally been quite hard on is Darnell Nurse. You know, he's taken a long time to kind of find his game defensively, and he was really prone to major defensive lapses that led to, like, goals and big chances against. And never really seemed to get better at any of it, even, you know, as the years went on. But going into this season, he was brought in. He was labeled basically as the Oilers' number one defenseman with Oscar Klefbom out, and him and the team struggled early on. I mean, they only won like three of their first eight or nine games. But since that point, him and the Oilers have been on fire. Like, they've won 9 of their last 11 games, and a big reason of that is the play of Darnell Nurse. he's capped it off this past weekend playing 30 plus minutes in a back-to-back against Calgary, both games. And for him, the impact he is having, he's playing in all situations right now. Like, he's got like a minute and a half of power play time per game, and like over 2 minutes of shorthanded time per game, and over 20 minutes of even strength time per game. He's playing all over the place. Himself, he's got 16 points already in 20 games and 6 goals. I know it's plus minus, it's not a great thing, but he's plus 13.
Probably a career high.
Surprisingly, no. There were a few seasons ago he was like plus 15 or 16.
Wow.
5 versus 5, the Oilers are plus 4. And he also leads the team in even strength goals. Like, all of his goals, I think, are even strength so far this year. He's playing the most commonly with Tyson Barry and Ethan Bear. And with those two partners, he is sitting at 59.98 and 61.18 goals for percentage, respectively, for the two of those. And I mean, of all pairings that have over 50 minutes of time on ice per game, or time on ice, pardon me, him and Barry are 9th in goals for per 60 at 4.77. And if you move that up to 75 as a minimum, it puts him at 3rd. Like, those two are one of the top pairings in the league in terms of goals for per 60.
Offense.
And individually, I mean, his possession numbers are hovering around 50%. And his goals for percentage, you know, just as him, is just under 60%. And, you know, so when he's on the ice, 60% of the goals that are happening are, you know, Oilers goals. So he has just been incredible. He's been a workhorse this season, and you know, it's nice to finally say that, you know, he's contributing a lot to the team's success. And as the Oilers defenders continually get injured, I think Ethan Bear, Slater Cuckoo are both out right now. He's going to get more and more of a role, and he's more than ready to handle it this season.
Yeah, he's looked good. Who would have thought that playing with a guy like Barry would give him what he needed. But because Barry's so offensively talented, I guess it kind of makes sense that, you know, Barry's always had a good breakout pass, a good stretch pass, and Nurse is such a physical battler that it kind of makes sense that they're able to move the puck to each other quickly and to get it out of the zone and to you know, snap it up to like McDavid or Dry or somebody else leaving the zone and generate some offense. So it's cool to see, because I know I've talked to you a lot about Nurse during our friendship, and you've always been pretty tough on him and have definitely pointed out where he has failed to, you know, make a simple play, or he's done something dumb and lost his guy or chased somebody around. And it seems like he's playing with a guy who kind of also does that, so he's more like maybe a bit more responsible or something. Like, he has to be the responsible guy. Do you think that comes into it at all? That,
yeah, he's now the
like,
older
oh wait,
sibling.
I can't do that. Yeah, like I have to be the the more defensive guy, because it seems like something has shifted for him. But maybe he was just ready to take that next step and get some more opportunity. It looks like he's definitely surpassed, you know, Larson in the depth chart for sure.
Yeah,
Larson
easily.
Was brought in as that, he was brought in as that kind of more of a shutdown guy, but Nurse is now the guy playing those heavy minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And those are hard minutes too. Like, he's playing against some top end performers, and to have, you know, a goals for percentage in his favor is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, especially being in the North Division. I mean, the Oilers at this point, they've got a positive goal differential as a team, so you know, they've improved on that from the beginning of the season, where they were really struggling defensively. But he's done well. Like, he's one of those reasons that the team has switched gears so much. You know, he's playing 25 to 30 minutes per game. He's leading the league in time on ice right now. So when someone's on the ice that much, and when the entire team shifts and turns around and does so much better all of a sudden, the guy who's always on the ice is going to be a major reason why. So the team's got a positive goal differential. He's got a positive goal differential. He's a major reason why they've turned it around.
And I just quickly looked up here because I had a suspicion. but he's at a 48.8% offensive zone start percentage. So he starts most of his shifts in the defensive zone. And oftentimes when a player has, you know, a positive goals for, especially for defensemen, like you look at someone like Quinn Hughes, it's because they get those sheltered starts where they're in the offensive zone all the time. They start, you know, in the power play, or they start when the third line brings it up the ice and gets a whistle when the goalie covers it. They throw that guy out and he's on the point for, you know, an offensive zone start. Nurse is actually starting in the defensive zones more often than not. So it makes it even more impressive that he's getting that sort of performance while starting and being in that defensive mode first.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of Alberta, you had mentioned to me earlier some stuff about the Calgary Flames. Why don't you break down a little bit of what's going on over there?
So I was surprised that you hadn't heard about this because it involves probably your top favorite player in the league, Matthew Tkachuk. He's kind of seems to be at the forefront of this, where Calgary has a bit of an issue in their room where, and this is from Elliot Friedman, on his podcast with Jeff Merrick, 31 Thoughts, where Elliot was saying that there's allegedly a bit of a rift in the Calgary locker room where, not everybody agrees with how Tkachuk plays the game, where he is. I've played hockey with some guys like this where they try to make it all about them and they get you into like a heated game where you necessarily didn't want to play that way. And, you know, guys like Johnny Gaudreau, maybe he doesn't want to play in a game where everyone's trying to fucking kill you all game, right? Like, he's a small, skilled forward. You know, maybe he doesn't want to be in a game where everyone's fucking gunning out there going crazy. But he wasn't listed by name, Gaudreau, but it's just an example of how that might come up. So this all kind of got sparked by that Jake Muzzin flipping the puck at Tkachuk, and how Tkachuk was kind of left there on his own. Nobody on his team came over there to help him out. Gaudreau was on Spit and Chicklets and he said, like, oh, we didn't know what was going on. We kind of were all skating off to go to the room, and so we didn't notice that. But, you know, they had a long time to see what was going on. And, like, he was freaking out on the bench. And I think he was the first guy down the tunnel freaking out. And so, you know, there was apparently a player's only meeting that was instigated by Tkachuk about this, you know, the lack of intensity in games and just, you know, we're not winning and we got to get something going. And that's always how he's played the game. And, you know, trying to get that physical presence, that get under guys' skin, get some emotional something going, right? And that's what he is. He brings a lot to the team that way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you had Jacob Markstrom charging out against the Canucks. And apparently that was something about the, like, you know, we're not trying enough. Like, yeah. Come on, guys.
Like, sending a like, Elliot thinks it's sending a message that, like, we're not playing hard enough. So it's like Markstrom's going to take charge of that and, you know, literally charge down the ice at Canucks forwards.
Yeah, very literal. And so I just kind of wanted to talk to you about this because, you know, you're an Oilers fan, so you are biased, but I actually agree with Tkachuk on this, and I perhaps am a little bit more neutral on Tkachuk than you are because he's not in the same division as my favorite team, but he is that player, and he gets them into games. He's skilled. He's their best player, I think. He brings the most value to that team. He gives their team an identity, and he is in every game. You know, he hasn't hit the score sheet perhaps as much as people wanted him to so far this year, but he's still producing, and, you know, that's his game. And if people don't want him to play that way, like, I think it's a better thing to do to ask everyone else to ramp their energy up than to tell him tone it down.
Especially when the team's performing as they are. Because it's not a case of, like, you've got one guy going, like, batshit crazy and the rest of the team is still doing well around it. It's like the rest of the team is struggling and you've got Tkachuk trying to lift their spirits on his own, basically.
Yeah, and like he's not performing, but he's still doing that energy stuff. He's still, you know, getting in guys' grills. He's still hitting. He's still being a pain to play against. And he's making it hard out there for other players. And he's drawing attention, you know, away from like a defenseman playing the puck because they're worried he's going to come out of nowhere and hit them and stuff. So, you know, I think he's totally right. Like they gotta level up their intensity and their compete level to be on the same level as him. You know, they don't have to play that same way, but at least give that effort and that drive to win. And if that's not there, you know, they perhaps got to look at shaking up the room a bit. And apparently that's not off the table, looking at making some changes. And it's tough because of the border issue, but you know, they've had their issues in playoffs where they get to playoffs and there's just no drive there. And when Tkachuk was out in playoffs, it was very noticeable that he wasn't there, and they lost probably because he wasn't there, right? Like it was a major contributor to why they lost. So I'm happy to hear you say that, because it proves to me that although you may not be his biggest fan, that you can see that you know, the value that he brings to that club, because he's very much that type of player that you hate to play against him, but if he was on your team, you would absolutely love him.
Yeah. It's the like thing Tom is, Wilson. He does need to tone it down a little bit, because he very often crosses the line between effective pest and dirty player. And I mean, I think the Muzzin puck flip was basically in response to when he drove his knee into Jack Campbell, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So like that incident, you know, I obviously wasn't there. I wasn't, you know, I don't have a very good angle on watching Tkachuk fall into Campbell, but because it's him and just looking at the way he drops his knee into Jack Campbell, you know, it's stuff like that that really turns the hockey world against a player. Other than when he does stuff like that, you know, he's an effective energy guy. And like we talked about this over the summer about him taking over the team from Gaudreau as their, you know, being the guy on the Flames. He is the type of guy who can do that. He's the type of player that can. And I think it's a bit of a challenge. It sounds like Tkachuk himself is frustrated and confused at the same time, because he doesn't know what his role is supposed to be. You know, if the rest of the guys aren't rallying behind him doing his thing, you know, what is he doing wrong, or what can he do to change it up? It's a bit of a tricky one, and they really, the Flames as a whole, like all the players and probably even the coaching staff, because it doesn't sound like there's too many strong or good feelings towards Jeff Ward as head coach right now either. They need to sit down and have some very difficult conversations and air some grievances to figure out what's going on here. They need like a leader to step up and sort some of this stuff out. It doesn't sound like any of that's happening right now, and it's like that players only meeting made things worse from the sounds of it, because that's kind of where things started to even get even worse.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. He does cross the line, and he does, you know, the thing on Campbell was definitely, it warranted some sort of retribution, if you want to use that word, from the Leafs, but like the puck flip was pretty weak. But like, if you see your teammate like getting into it, you have to at least go grab a guy. Like you see like players like Marner and Nicklas Backstrom and like, you know, guys like that who are like, they're not fighters, but they'll still go into a scrum and like grab a guy. Like
yeah,
they're not doing anything, but they grab him.
You know, they'll grab an arm around a guy. They'll just be on the perimeter and they're not like engaging, but they're still there and they're supporting their team.
They're there. Yeah, they're there, and I think that's probably where his frustration lies, right? He doesn't feel like his team is backing him up.
I'm going to bring this back to Edmonton for one sec, but back in the dark days, you know, around 2010, 2011, there is this joke amongst the Oilers fan base about the bus stop mentality, where it's like you've got the opposition beating up Taylor Hall, and you have three of the other four guys on the ice that are just standing around watching like they're at a bus stop. And they're not engaging. Like, there's no sense of a team mentality, and like that's kind of where, you know, Elliot says that the Flames aren't really playing for each other right now, and it's exemplified by that, where you've got Tkachuk going and trying to stir shit up on his own, and the rest of the team is unaware, not paying attention, purposely ignoring it, like whatever you want to call it, and you know that seems to represent that quite well. They're just they're just playing for themselves. They're not really cohesive. They're not really cohesive as a group right now.
You said like the bus stop mentality Ottawa's playing right now. Eric Goodbranson, when he was on the Canucks, I have a friend of mine absolutely hated him because he was kind of brought in. He's that big defenseman, you know, he's known to throw his hands every once in a while. And Pettersson would get targeted because this was like his rookie season, and Goodbranson would be out there but like wouldn't do anything. He'd just like skate away. So like I think he was on the ice when like Matheson just like body slammed Pettersson. He just doesn't do anything. And it's like my friend would be like, what are you doing? That's the guy that you were brought in basically to like protect, and you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
And that's like, it's like, and then like, yeah, see ya, like get out of here, we'll bring like, you know, JT Miller in. Is a guy who will step up. He did that in the play-in round. He did that in playoffs. It's like, no, don't touch that guy. Like, he's my teammate, and I'm back. I'm getting in there. I'll take you out so that he doesn't have to. And then, you know, Tkachuk can fight his own battles, but, you know, it's nice to see the teammates getting in there with him and, you know, helping him out. And the second thing I wanted to say is, where's Giordano in all of this? You know, he's seen a little bit of a decrease in ice time. His role has gotten a little bit smaller. His power play time is reduced. You know, he's still out there on the power play, but not as much. He's getting a bit more of sheltered minutes so that he's can save some energy down the stretch. But this team's kind of getting away on him.
He's the captain still, so he should be front and center.
If he's not getting involved here, like, you should rip that C off of his chest, because it's like the whole Jumbo Joe thing when he lost the captaincy in San Jose. It's like, you're not getting involved here. Basically, like, let's give it to somebody else who has the room. And I think at the end of the day, it's like, it's probably either Johnny or it's Tkachuk, and you got to pick one.
Yep.
What do you want the identity of this team to be? Do you want it to be skilled, fast forward, or do you want it to be that, it's a battle every night. We're going to play with our heart on our sleeve. We're going to, you know, play physical hockey. What's it going to be? Because it seems like the team is kind of split a little bit. You know, you've got guys like Mangiapane. You guys got like Rasmus Anderson and Tkachuk, who are battlers and just go out there every shift and play hard. And then you've got Gaudreau, who is having a good year but is streaky, him and Monahan. And so it's like, what is this team's identity? I think the captain's got to step up and kind of lay that down. And if Tkachuk called that players meeting, he saw that it was a problem and that it needed to be talked about, even if it didn't get it handled. But it's like, that's the thing that a captain would do, right? So
that's the thing. It's not necessarily like it's a difficult conversation to have in a dressing room where it's like you have to say the uncomfortable things, like calling out people who are not performing the way they need to be, or, you know, criticizing teammates and stuff. You have to have those difficult conversations. You have to be able to do that. If they don't find a way to have those conversations, then they're never going to get these grievances out. They're just going to keep running with this dysfunctional locker room. They've got a good team. They've got a good core. They've got a handful of really talented young players coming up. But if they don't find a way to get a functional locker room, and they don't find a way to rally behind the leader of the room, whoever it ends up being, they're never going to push through that next barrier. You mentioned their struggles in the playoffs, and it's so true that they get dominated in the playoffs immediately. They have other teams come in that are playing harder, faster, stronger, and as soon as the going gets tough for a lot of Calgary's best players, they disappear. And we saw it last year. Like, we thought Matthew Tkachuk was going to be able to, you know, get the team to rally behind and power through the playoffs a little bit better than they did, but he got injured and the team just faltered. You know, they need that type of energy. They need to get a functional locker room where they're playing for each other.
Yeah, their best line in playoffs was that Dubé, Bennett, Lucic line, because it played that way, right? And they I believe they outscored Gaudreau and Monahan. And so with all the rumors about Sam Bennett, you know, requesting a trade, whether he did or not, it's like his value for them in playoffs is too high to be like one of those, you know, there's a rumor about like Vertanen for Bennett, but it's like Bennett plays center and he's a playoff hero for them. So that's not going to happen. Yeah, it's like you know, when the year that the Blues won the cup, they had a terrible record, and then in December, Robert Bertuzzo and Zach Sanford had a fight at practice, and it was almost like a catalyst for them to change everything and to start playing good hockey. And from that point, they basically went on a tear, you know, made playoffs, won the cup. And, you know, maybe it's got to be something like that where it's like, just leave it on the ice. Like, just have some sort of battle, fight each other or something, you know, and then just, that's it. It's over with. Like, we got it out. Left it on the ice, and now we can focus on playing hockey. You know, it's like if they're in the room and they're not playing for each other, and there's all these new guys in the room who are throwing off the dynamic, it's like you gotta address it, and you gotta get over it if you want to compete. And they've got to do something. And I think that you know, that sits on the coach and that sits on the captain to kind of make that happen. And if that's not happening, you got to look at making another coaching change, which would suck. Or a captain change, which would also kind of suck, but it could be the right move. So, yeah, it was a weird times in Calgary. But I'm sure you're okay with that as a as an Oilers fan.
Well, I mean, as a fan of the Oilers, yeah, hoping for a playoff spot to open up for Edmonton, yes, because currently it means that Edmonton is able to be higher in the standings in Calgary. But I mean, ultimately, you just want to see. You want to see good teams and, you know, strong. You want to see the good teams win, and you know there's a lot of guys on that team that deserve to win. That they're playing well, they're doing all right, but you just don't want to see the dysfunctional locker room. You don't want to see another. You know, I'm quite familiar with this dysfunctional locker room lengthening a rebuild way longer than it needs to be by watching the Oilers over the last 10 years. Tons of organizational turmoil and turnover and. You know, potential locker room issues, you know, they're all pretty much allegations and anecdotes and stuff, but you don't want to see stuff like that holding a team back. You want to see every team performing as best as they can just for the best quality of action for the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to think that if they move one of those guys, that they're not going to get fair value. Like, if it comes down between, like, Monahan, Gaudreau, or Tkachuk, like, if you're trading away to skilled forward, you're not going to get enough back. So it'll be interesting to see if they make a roster change, if that's what they decide what to do. Maybe the Tkachuk brothers could be reunited on Ottawa, and it'll be a brand new pesky Sens where it's just they are super hard to play against.
And on that note, we're going to wrap things up for this week here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to our show while you spread around the good word of Clappercast. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.
How's it going, hockey fans? This is episode... Shit, I forgot to look up what episode it is.